D.A. Lampe Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit dalampeconstruction.com. And by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5:30 p.m. at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. Serving Chico and the North State since 1975. And I want to thank those who called in during our show tonight. I think we surpassed our goal of $200, or at least we hit the goal. And I am out of time, and stay tuned now for Planetary Radio.
From the launch of a mission to a new eclipse map, this week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah Al-Ahmed of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. After decades of work, the Psyche mission's principal investigator, Lindy Elkins-Tanton, got to watch her team's spacecraft blast off on its voyage to explore a metallic asteroid. She joins us this week for an emotional retelling of that day in October 2023. Then Jesse Tomlinson and Stephen Watkins from the Eclipse Company tell us about their partnership with the Planetary Society and the launch of their new eclipse map for the upcoming 2024 total solar eclipse in North America. We'll close out with What's Up with Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. Bruce and I are going to muse a little bit about the space moments that we think spark the most wonder. If you love Planetary Radio and want to stay informed about the latest space discoveries, make sure you hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcasting platform. By subscribing, you'll never miss an episode filled with new and awe-inspiring ways to know the cosmos and your place within it. If you've been a fan of Planetary Radio for a while, you'll probably remember our next guest, Lindy Elkins-Tanton. She's a Foundation and Regents Professor in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at Arizona State University. She's also the principal investigator for NASA's Psyche mission, which launched on October 13th, 2023. Lindy has shared so much of herself with us over the years, not just detailing the Psyche mission, but about her own life. Her conversation with Planetary Radio's previous host, Matt Kaplan, about her book, which is called A Portrait of the Scientist as a Young Woman, makes me emotional every time I hear it. But today she's back for a very special reason. After years of tireless effort and passion from her and her team, NASA's Psyche mission is finally in space. It's on its way to explore the metallic asteroid also called Psyche, which might just be the exposed core of a protoplanet from the early solar system. But for Lindy, it's the culmination of so much more. It's the realization of a dream hard won through perseverance and teamwork. Hey, Lindy.
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you again, and thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, the last time we talked, I remember saying near the end, after this launch, I wanted to invite you back on because what a moment. You've been working on this for so many years. Like,
oh my gosh.
How does it feel to finally have your spacecraft out into space?
Beginning to feel like it's a new normal. It is. I have the, I had a countdown clock running on my desktop, and now it's a count up clock because it did work that way. I'm beginning to feel like I'm catching up on sleep a bit. The spacecraft is performing so well, and we had such a roller coaster of challenges to overcome, including at the last minute before launch. And so this feels like some surreal new kind of world. Yeah.
Right. What happened on launch day that made that so complicated?
Launch day itself was the most perfect and beautiful launch day ever. But 2 weeks before launch, we discovered we had a problem with our coal gas thrusters, that they were going to overheat. And this was just a couple of geniuses who I'm indebted to forever at JPL who just thought, you know, I don't feel totally comfortable with this. Let's look into it. And it turned out we, you know, had been given the wrong data, which we based all of our operations on for years. And when they took their own data, it was a different story. So suddenly, and this was the day I arrived in Florida, thinking I had kind of let my guard down, which is always a mistake. Like, I was like, okay, we're just going to coast into launch. It's going to be a series of parties and this amazing experience. And then suddenly it was just like red alert. because this could be mission ending. If they overheated, we would no longer be able to turn our spacecraft, and we probably would never know what failed on the thrusters.
What a nightmare.
A nightmare. So suddenly 100, 150 people, like all hands on deck, every kind of alarm blaring you could imagine. 2 a.m., I'm on WebEx calls with 70 people. And I've just never, honest to God, this was a masterclass in how teams work best, because it just could not have been handled better, and found a solution. And we did have to move the launch, 7 days. Incredible, really solved it. And that was amazing. And then we thought, great, okay, we're going to launch on the 12th. And we get on the weather call, Henry Stone, the project manager, and Ben Weiss, the deputy PI, and myself standing outside under the eaves of this building where we were having our team party. We had to go outside to take this call. The heavens open, it's pouring rain, and we're listening on the call, and it's the super expert weather person from the Space Force side saying, it's not looking good for the 12th. We're expecting tornadoes. And we're like, of course we're expecting tornadoes. Of course we are. Actually, Ben Weiss and I just started cracking up, because it just could not have been more perfect. So we were just fated from the beginning to launch on Friday the 13th. And that day was the most perfect launch day ever. So that's, you can imagine the kind of exhaustion and hilarity we were entering into that launch day with.
I hope you still got to have some of your parties, though.
We had the parties anyway, because you can't really reorganize. You have whatever, 500 or 600 people coming, and it's just, you're going to have the party anyway. So it's like a pre-launch party. So on launch morning, I got up really early because I got to sit on console, and the console that I got to sit on, there were 10 different rooms of people doing operations for the spacecraft. A bunch of them were at Kennedy Space Center, and then there's the big operations room at Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And we're all on headsets listening to the voice net, and we're all watching the consoles. And so my console was in Hangar AE on the Space Force side. So I get up long before dawn. It's totally pitch black, and come up to the gate to go into the Space Force side. And I've got, I've got my badge, and, I'm ready to go in. And there were so many people coming on for launch that they had actually opened 2 lanes so that we could get onto the base, and they're checking all the badges. And then the base and Kennedy are both just miles and miles of swampy Florida wilderness jungle, interspersed with occasional gigantic launch complexes. And there's no street lights. You're driving up this 2-lane road in the absolute pitch dark. And then there's a little lighted sign by the side of the road that just says, "Go Psyche." there were these wonderful moments. It was a big, big deal. So many people making this happen. And then, 10 or 11,000 people came to see the launch as well. So sitting in that console at Hangar AE and listening to the countdown, following it in my launch book. And that was just an amazing experience.
That's got to be so cool to see the people locally cheering for your mission. Because I got that sense. I've only been to one launch, or rather attempted launch, at Kennedy Space Center. But just seeing all of the shop windows with their signs for the missions and all the people showing up, there's something really cool about the community around that space center.
I love that. And we have so much support for this mission from around the world, too. That was just a thrill to know that so many people were participating, So we're going through, and this is a big deal launch for SpaceX, because it's their first NASA deep space mission launch, and just the 8th Falcon Heavy. So they really wanted it to go well. And we had great working relationship with SpaceX. And so all these teams from different organizations came together into one. And the countdown is going so smoothly. And the big higher ups from NASA who were in the room with me are like, "This feels good. This is going to happen." And we're going through the book. And for a while, there's just periods of silence because there's actually no problems and nothing to work and everything's working. And then at 10 minutes before launch, after doing the countdown now for hours, suddenly there's a problem. I wasn't sure. I knew it wasn't good, but I didn't know how bad it was. So I turned to one of the JPL leadership who was sitting to my left, and he just swore, which he never does. And then I thought, oh my gosh. And so we all had collective, 500 people had a heart attack for 2 minutes until it was resolved at launch minus 8 minutes. And then it proceeded.
What a roller coaster.
Oh my gosh. Right. It was good to just be afraid for a minute because things were going very smoothly. And then then the rocket worked perfectly. And as soon as it was launched, we all ran out of the building and just watched it with our eyes. And we looked up in the sky and we saw the rocket and we watched the boosters separate. And then we watched them land, and they're very close to us over there at Hangar AE, and the sonic booms and the like rumbling, crackling sonic booms that are just, I love that. Like, people get excited about Formula One race cars, but let me tell you, go to a Falcon Heavy launch. And then there's no going back. Like, it's just amazing. And then had to figure out how to drive myself over to the press center, because I and some of the JPL management and our project manager, our deputy principal investigator, all these people, were like 10 of us, are supposed to meet at this conference room in the press center, because they don't want us to meet any press until we've kind of reached mission success, mm-hmm. which is that we've got telemetry and we're locked on and the solar panels are power positive and we're thermally stable. Like, these are a bunch of things that are, we don't even separate from the rocket till 62 minutes after launch. And it could be even another 2 hours before those things are accomplished. So we don't want any confusing, like, partial messages. And so I had to figure out how to drive over there through the 500 cars that were leaving from all the people watching on the causeway and stuff. But it was very well done. And I just took out my cell phone and hit record for one of these voice memos and just kind of poured out everything that I was feeling at that moment, which I haven't listened to again yet. I don't know what I said. So that'll be interesting.
That's a beautiful thing to record and keep, you know, that you'll get to reflect on that moment in the future. And our listeners have been on this journey with you for literally years, not just about the Psyche mission, but about your personal life, your personal journey, everything you've overcome. So seeing you in this moment and knowing that you have that record, I feel like that's so special, and you're going to have to listen to it at some point.
I am. And I've been also keeping a notebook, because I knew I wouldn't remember all the incredible things that happened during this super intense, insane month that I was living in Florida. And my husband moved down with me. He's like, no, you're going to need me to grocery shop. Like, this is going to be great. And so we supported each other. We were each having like good work stuff going on. And we had a little Airbnb with a pond behind it, and we could kayak through the mangroves. And I mean, it was just so many things. I wrote almost like 70 pages of all of these experiences, because I feel that. And also, you know, like I wrote about in my memoir, there was a moment right during step one where I had cancer and I had to go through chemotherapy, and I had a huge amount of nerve damage. And for a while I was even having trouble walking, and I had like huge muscle spasms and like the body not working. And so now, not only has my rocket launched, which is amazing, but in the past year, I've actually totally regained my health. And so I now am pain-free and I can jog, and like, it's amazing. So it's like this stellar moment. I just turned 58, which I freaking can't believe, but I'm like, this is a really good moment. So I can't forget about it.
Yeah, this seems like a book all on its own.
I feel like it could be, like, I don't know. It's an intense emotional experience. That's for sure. Yeah, so we show up at the press center, and we had to sneak around the back and come in the secret door so we could end up in this closed conference room and not run into all the press in the front. And so we're all in there, and a couple of the guys have hooked into the Psyche ops, and they're getting the data down, and they're like, wait, we're power positive. We're like, wait a minute. We all watch the separation on the screen, and everybody could see that, right? It was broadcast via SpaceX's onboard cameras to everybody in the world, and you can watch it on the replay of the launch comm. And we'd asked them to give us no angular momentum, no spin at tip-off. We wanted the spacecraft to be going absolutely straight with no spin so that we could right away get down to opening the solar arrays. And we all watched, and we're like, our heads are tipping, like, is it spinning? Is it rotating? But it wasn't. It was just perfect. It just soared away. And we knew there was some chances that the low-gain antennas would get picked up by the deep space network, and suddenly we're like, oh my gosh, that was a little bit of telemetry. Wait a minute, what are we getting? And then the solar arrays deployed, we're getting power. The spacecraft detumbles, it uses those cold gas thrusters. It all works. The cold gas thrusters are not overheating. We couldn't even believe it. They were so cool and perfect. And so then the head of the press group, this wonderful woman from JPL, she's used to there being contingencies, like anomalies and issues after launch. And she didn't want us to have to be solving them while hangry after being on console for like 5-6 hours. And so she went out to get us sandwiches, thinking it was going to be hours more. And while she was gone, we hit all of the things needed for mission success. And so we locked on, we had telemetry, the spacecraft was healthy, it was thermally stable, it was power positive. She came back with the sandwiches and we're like, yay!
Victory sandwich.
Yeah, we couldn't even believe We kept looking at each other and going like, pinch me, I can't believe how well this is going. And then we took a million loopy pictures. And that was launch day. It was amazing.
It really sounds like the team came together and really heroed up and totally nailed it. That's amazing.
I really feel that way. And now, you know, 15 days out, there are little things that we're working, which is so expected, and nothing that's very worrying. And all the major processes that we've been planning to do so far in initial checkout have worked beautifully. And so, you know, in spacecraft speak, as you know, when everything is working perfectly, it's called nominal. I still don't understand where that comes from. Maybe you do, because it makes no...
I don't know where that started. Yeah, I do love making nominal jokes around the house, though.
We do that all the time, too. How are you today, James? I'm nominal. Yeah, meaning perfect, you know, absolutely perfect. And so the next day after launch, we reached that coveted state of sys-nominal, systems nominal. And it's just been great. So today, in fact, as we're talking, we're switching from the low gain to the high gain antenna. We're finally far enough away that amount of energy won't damage either the spacecraft or the deep space network, because apparently that would happen if we turned on the high gain antenna closer to Earth, which is also fascinating to me.
That is fascinating.
So we're right in the middle of turning the spacecraft for that when I came to talk to you. And so soon we'll have 6 times the data rate, which is great.
That's really cool. What do the next years look like for your team? Because it won't actually reach asteroid Psyche until 2029. So you have a little bit of time here to sit around and ponder life.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I'm super looking forward to that. Because, ever since really... I mean, there have been challenges before that, but it was really the advent of COVID basically almost 4 years ago that we started into crisis mode. And it's basically been continuous crisis mode for this team for the last 3¾ years, which is a long time to be living in that state. So we're all looking forward to some sort of return to normalcy. We've got about 100 days of initial checkout all scheduled. We're doing operations Monday, Wednesday, and Friday so that Tuesday and Thursday we can do data analysis and clean up stuff and like not be pushed too hard. And Deep Space Optical Comms is going to start having its opportunities. And we just opened its cover last week. And so we're ready to do the initial checkout for that instrument next week. So that's going to be great for the team. And then the Mars flyby, and we'll be doing a lot of science planning. But I think a very much more human rate of work for the next number of years. And I did just set up a software countdown clock to Psyche arrival. And we don't know exactly the day that we'll be, you know, going into orbit, because it depends on a lot of things with electropropulsion. But give or take 2,100 days to go.
The countdown begins all over again. I'm just channeling Battlestar Galactica in my brain.
Exactly.
Less stressful.
Yes. Yes, but in a good way. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Are we going to actually get images from the spacecraft during the Mars flyby?
You know, we are going to be calibrating all the instruments, but it's going to be a pretty distant flyby, so it's not clear how exciting that's going to be. And we had at one point hoped to get a look back at the Earth and the Moon, but honestly, we screamed away from the Earth and the Moon so fast. By the time we could have turned on the cameras and turned around, you couldn't see anything. So, yeah.
It's almost like those Falcon Heavy rockets really got some launch to them.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah, a lot of C3 just flung us out there, because we haven't not turned on our propulsive thrusters yet, and we won't until after the initial checkout, and we'll be testing them and stuff. So this is all just fling from the rocket.
So while people are kind of in this moment, it's going to be a few years before the mission gets there. How can the public still keep engaged with this mission, get updates, or interact with it? Because I know there's been so many wonderful interaction moments, the Psyche-inspired program. What can people get into nowadays?
Yeah, well, there's going to be Psyche-inspired the whole time. So look for new student art coming absolutely all the time. I just looked at the plans for the next class of artists for their first artwork. And so all of that will appear on our psyche.asu.edu website. And then there are some great sites to keep up with things. There's one that shows where Psyche is right now and how many light seconds one-way communications is and stuff like that. And I've been posting them on my X feed. I still am not used to calling it that, my Twitter feed. And I guess we need to put some of those links up on our ASU website as well. And there's a NASA website. And so there's lots of ways to keep up. And we'll be going back. We had a little bit of a hiatus just because people had so much work to do. But we want to go back to having team members write little blogs about what they're doing and their personal experience. And so I hope there'll be lots of ways for people to stay connected.
I'm so happy for you and your team. You totally done it. This mission is on the way, and now you get to have some much needed rest. So
yes.
I hope you all have a lot of chilled downtime. Yeah. Look up in the sky at night, see the stars, and think, my spacecraft is out there. We did it.
Oh, it's unbelievable to see that and think that. Yeah. But Jim Bell said it really well, like a wild animal. We've released it into its native habitat. Now it's really happy. It's doing everything right.
That's beautiful.
I thought so too.
Well, thanks for joining me, Lindy, and for taking the time. I know you're super busy. I hope you get back to all your adventures at JPL and that the high gain antenna, everything goes well.
Thanks for your interest and support and the chance to talk about that crazy launch day.
Thanks, Lindy. I'm so happy that I get to share that conversation with you. I've been looking forward to that for quite a while, but it's also a great reminder that every time you support a space mission, you're bolstering the dreams of thousands of people around the world, and you really never know whose life you might touch. We turn from that moment of awe to another, the upcoming total solar eclipse on April 8th, 2024. It's going to pass over Mexico, the United States of America, and Canada. If you never experienced a total solar eclipse before, I urge you to do so in the strongest way possible. I really can't express to you what it's like. You just have to experience it for yourself. It's a moment that could change your life, which I think our next guests would agree with. Stephen Watkins and Jesse Tomlinson are the founders of the Eclipse Company. By trade, they're software engineers, but they had a moment of awe when they experienced the total solar eclipse that passed over their hometown on August 21st, 2017. And it set them on a journey to share the next big American eclipse with as many people as possible. They teamed up with the Planetary Society to create a beautiful, user-friendly eclipse map with all kinds of fun science details. It's designed to help the public locate an optimal viewing spot for the upcoming eclipse. This will be the last total solar eclipse to pass over the United States for the next 20 years, so this is going to be a moment. Thanks for joining me, Jesse and Steve.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And thanks for collaborating with us on this really cool eclipse map. I cannot tell you how useful this would have been for me at points in my past. So I'm really glad it exists. Why did you feel it was so important to create this eclipse map?
I think in 2017, we had the, I guess, fortune to live in the path of totality for that solar eclipse that happened. We both were living in Greenville, South Carolina, and that city happened to be in the path. And it was such a life-changing experience for me, and it's such a great moment. And I think about what led up to that, that let me experience that. And I feel like I got lucky as far as knowing it and just understanding the significance and being ready for it. And also just the weather, we got lucky with the weather, but it's something about all the people that I talked to afterwards that I said, did you see the eclipse? And they said, yes, but they were talking about a very different experience than I had. There was just clearly still a huge gap in the understanding for the public of what a total eclipse was and how that was very different from a partial eclipse. So really wanted to do something to help really just raise more awareness and help people be more prepared to get the most out of the eclipse that was coming here in 24.
Did you want to add anything, Steve?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with Jesse. Again, I was in South Carolina as well and got to experience totality for the first time. And it was a special moment, really powerful. I didn't even fully understand what I was getting into at the time, like I think a lot of other people. And I knew that in 2024, there's going to be another total eclipse. And yeah, I wanted to create a tool to help prepare people for the next one, to try to raise awareness and empower planning to help people understand where the path is and help remove obstacles toward getting people into that path.
It's funny because I've dedicated my entire life to learning about space and sharing it with other people, but I had a similar experience in that it wasn't until I was there, staring up at the total solar eclipse in 2017, that I really understood what it was. It felt like no amount of people telling you how cool this thing is really expresses how cool it is. It's absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, I tell people it's the one thing that really lives up to the hype. So many things in our world today are just so over-exaggerated. People talking about the coffee shop they just went to was life-changing, or just everything is just so over the top as far as our language goes. But when people talk about totality or total solar eclipses, they use that language. And I think a lot of times it just blends in with everything else that's happening online and in our language today. So it's hard, but it does. It lives up to the hype.
I love that on your website, you brought up the overview effect, which is that feeling that astronauts feel, that profound feeling of connection that they get when they look down at the Earth from space. And, you know, we're probably not going to go to space, us personally, but I think watching a total solar eclipse is about as close as I can get. How did the eclipse make you guys feel?
It's honestly one of the best days of my life that I remember. I had such a great group of people around me, and my family was with me. We were in our backyard in South Carolina and just had a bunch of friends over. And it was just, it's hard to explain it, but like everyone had such a different reaction to it. I have a video from one of my friends that you can just hear the audio. It's not a good video, but the audio is really crazy. You just hear people screaming. Some people are just speechless. I was really just more overwhelmed. I wasn't screaming. I was just like, I don't know how to explain it, but it just overwhelmed me. And just taking it all in, because it's not just what you see up in the sky. It's like all around you. Just there's things happening on the ground and on the sky to the sides, and how you feel the temperature and all these various things. It's just too much almost happening at the same time. And yeah, I think I was more just overwhelmed by it. Yeah.
Relatable.
Yeah.
How about you, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. I think overwhelmed is a good word for it. There's actually a TED Talk done by David Baron, who I think does a great job of putting to words some of these complex emotions that you feel when in a total eclipse. It's just a powerful moment. It's difficult to describe.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. It can make you feel just like a new level of connection, like with the universe, and kind of insignificant, kind of humbling in a way, like dissolving the ego. And just that profound sense of connection, I think, is a very powerful thing that we don't necessarily get all the time in life.
Right. For me, it was this weird moment of just kind of like looking up at the moon and realizing that's a whole rock hanging over my head. It's not just a beautiful, shiny object I sometimes look at night. The physicality of its presence blocking out the sun was just absolutely startling.
We were just in Texas, Uvalde County, to see the annular solar eclipse. And at this viewing event we were at, there was a local a university researcher who was doing this thing called Project Awe with these portable EEG machines, I think they are, that measure your brain waves. He asked for volunteers and I volunteered. And basically during the annular eclipse, during that ring of fire moment, he was trying to see if different things happen on your brain waves and different scans. And they're trying to measure awe. And it's such an interesting project to try to figure that out. It was like, what is happening in our mind when we experience awe? And this is something Steve and I have talked a lot about over the past year, about with what we're doing with this eclipse thing, is trying to connect people to these moments of awe. Because you mentioned the overview effect and how that can make us feel more connected during the total eclipse is such a strong one, but there are other ones. And I mean, I think they're all important. There's all these different moments of awe that we can experience on Earth. And it's just, I think they're important for humanity to get out there and find them.
Yeah. It seems like we live in a more, I guess, a society that tends to be more individualistic a lot of times. And so a lot of times you lose that, I think, like this sense of collectivism, this sense of connection. And I think these moments, these natural moments, are a great reminder for humanity to like, we're in this together. There's a unifying, important aspect, I think, to this. So I think it's more than just like a specific moment of time. I think it's like an important thing for humanity to look up and reflect and have that collective moment.
And eclipses are a great way to do that, because all you got to do is get to that path of totality. But therein lies the complexity. I had a situation during the 2017 eclipse where I had been planning to drive to Oregon, but luckily they were having wildfires and the smoke made it impossible for me to go to my location to actually see that event. So 2 days before the eclipse, I rented a car, packed all my friends in my car, and drove to a completely different state. And just planning that was so complex that I think if I had a tool like your eclipse map, that would have made it so much easier. So how can people use this map to select their viewing location for the upcoming eclipse in 2024?
Yeah, it can